Hey, everybody, welcome to another edition of The Drop. Greg Wyshynski, Arto Ocal here with you every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your audio podcasts, as well on the NHL on ESPN YouTube. We are over Zoom right now. Shocking. I'm sure a lot of people expected us to be live from Salt Lake City, but we are not there yet.
No, we're not there yet. We might be. We might be by this time next season. We might be by this time in October in Salt Lake City. But yeah, I mean, again, the biggest story of the week. No big surprise here. The Arizona Coyotes on the cusp of moving to Salt Lake City as we do this podcast. The I's are not dotted. The T's are not crossed. But again, Emily Kaplan and I wrote a story about it on ESPN.com. You can read all the details, the inner workings of this explosive situation that happened this week with the Coyotes potentially relocating. Everybody we talked to said it's happening, Arda. I mean, literally everybody we talked to said it's pretty much a done deal, but no official confirmation from the NHL, the Coyotes, or the Salt Lake people. So we hesitate for a moment to say that anything could happen. Alex Morello is a kind of a wild card owner in some ways. But I think the winds are certainly blowing towards the Great Salt Lake at this point.
Okay, so let's dive into this. How did we get to this particular point? Which, let's be honest, we know that there was interest in the Salt Lake side for a team. We assume that might be way down the line. Now, all of a sudden, the timeline is severely accelerated after all the news that has been coming out regarding the lack of arena progress in the Phoenix area in Arizona, right? So, like, how did we get to this point where we could actually tangibly see this team possibly move to Salt Lake City as early as next season? How did we get to this point?
I think it's a combination of two things. Like you said, we all thought the Salt Lake City thing might happen down the line when the NHL decides to expand again. But the bottom line is that, you know, Houston is still percolating. Atlanta is still percolating, where we have two different ownership groups looking to build arenas there. You have a guy with an arena in Ryan Smith, the owner of the Utah Jazz, who is willing to pay upwards of $1.3 billion for an NHL team right now. And the NHL loves this guy. They want to be in business with this guy. And, you know, I don't think they wanted to wait for the next wave of expansion to get a team to Salt Lake City. So that's the Salt Lake part of it. There's clearly a desire to put a team there for the NHL and clearly a desire from Salt Lake City to have a team. The Coyotes part of it is very much about the arena. I get the sense that the NHL really soured on things after the Tempe vote failed. That was a straight through line to an arena. Pass the vote, get an arena. That's basically what it was. Now this is a little bit more of a, you got to win the bid. And is the facility actually going to be finished? And what does that multi-use thing look like? And where is the water coming from? And all these other questions that surround this project beyond, can they secure the land and the auction this summer? Oh, and by the way, shovels in the ground in 2025, at least that's what the team said, stuck in Mullet Arena until 2027. So the NHL seems like they came up with a fix, Arda, where they're going to move this incarnation of the Coyotes to Utah, give Salt Lake City their team, and then kind of make a subtle, not promise, but vow or something along those lines to say that they're going to come back to the Phoenix market at some point. And if they do, then perhaps to do well by Alex Morello for deciding to go along with this plan and not get litigious, he is first in line to potentially own a team, especially if this arena project is seen through fruition.
So that's interesting. They would be first in line still over markets like Houston and Atlanta that have been generating buzz. Like, how?
Well, we don't know that for sure.
How do we right?
You know, I'm saying if they come back to Phoenix, the things that we've heard in our reporting is that Morello would maybe be first in line to own the team, and that would also be the reason why they go through this whole rigmarole this summer with the auction and building the arena is in preparation for a team coming back. But again, who knows? And honestly,
let me ask you a question there. Please. Should they, if they do leave, should they be in consideration to get a team back?
Phoenix, absolutely. Like, Phoenix is a great market. I will stand by that. I think there are a number of reasons why the Coyotes failed there. One of them was moving out of Phoenix and going to Glendale. That set all the dominoes in motion for, you know, the lack of attendance, the battles with Glendale, the fact they didn't pay their bills, that toxicity that transferred over and was one of the reasons why they lost the Tempe vote and are stuck in Mullet Arena right now. But this is a really strong television market. They've made really strong inroads within the hockey community of youth hockey, really booming there because of the Coyotes. We've got Austin Matthews, Matthew Nyes, obviously Jake Doan now in the NHL. All of them come from Coyotes fandom, basically. There is every reason to go back. The other question, though, Arda, is should Alex Morello own the team based on everything that's happened with him and this franchise since he took it over? I don't know. And I think my opinion on this, not reporting, but opinion on this, is that maybe the NHL is sort of hoping that he takes his $1 billion for the Coyotes from them, is satisfied, and that maybe none of this arena construction thing actually comes to fruition. And when they come back to the market, it could potentially be with another owner. That's my opinion.
Okay. What about the players in all of this? The Coyotes players that now suddenly are facing the very real possibility of having to move uproot to Salt Lake City as early as next season.
Not only that, but like learned about it as we all learned about it. I mean, I was texting with a couple of the players yesterday, and they basically said, you know, we have not heard anything from upper management or ownership, and this is hours before their game against the Canucks. We are learning about this stuff as it goes along on social media and through the media. So that's where the Coyotes players were. And, you know, they took a little criticism after that game against Vancouver for not meeting the media. Logan Cooley was like the only guy who did media, and all he did was talk to the local TV station there. I just don't think I think we should have access to players at all times. I'm not trying to say that we shouldn't, but I have sympathy for the plight of the Coyotes in this situation, because I don't think that they were informationally or emotionally mature enough, let's say, to answer some of the questions that were going to come their way. They hadn't been in communication with ownership. They haven't had their big meeting to say, we are definitely moving. They were going to be asked a bunch of questions that I don't think they were prepared to answer. So my heart goes out to them. And yeah, Arda, it sucks. And by the way, let me just say this. A lot of fan bases, I don't think, have ever experienced what the Coyotes fans are experiencing right now. As a Devils fan, I did. They were going to maybe move to Nashville the year they won the Cup in 95. The Predators were going to move to Hamilton. Coyotes fans have been through this thing for several different phases of potential relocation, and other fan bases have too. And I think a lot of us have sympathy for what Coyotes fans are going through right now, watching this team scurry away to Salt Lake City because of things that are completely out of the fans and the players' control.
And to your point, I believe the Devils franchise and the Coyotes franchise, if they move to Salt Lake, would be the only two teams in NHL history to move twice. So Kansas City to Colorado to New Jersey, and now Winnipeg to Arizona to Salt Lake City. What about Salt Lake City? We know the owner really wants the team. We know the infrastructure is there. What about Salt Lake City as a hockey town?
I mean, listen, the NHL is extremely high on SLC being a place that's going to boom for hockey in the same way that Seattle has for the Kraken, let's say. I think Vegas is a different animal in a lot of ways. And like you said, you have an owner that is extraordinarily enthusiastic about owning an NHL team. The Delta Center, not ideal for hockey, but I think as part of the deal with the NHL to acquire the Coyotes, Ryan Smith has vowed to do a lot of work within that arena to make it more hockey friendly, hockey centric. I'm not sure if the talk about building a new facility for both the Jazz and this Utah NHL team is necessarily going to come to fruition in the near term, but they're going to put in the work in Delta Center to make it more hockey friendly. Look, I've heard people call it a slam dunk. I've heard people say that it's a growing market they should be in. And clearly it's one that the NHL is comfortable trying to rectify a bad situation by placing a team there now.
All right. This is obviously not the last we have heard of this story. You're going to continue your coverage and reporting on it as well. So check Wish's social media and ESPN.com for more updates. Here's my segue to our next segment. You mentioned Austin Matthews earlier, and that means whenever anything Leafs are mentioned anywhere, we got to dial in on. In the immortal words of certain hockey fans, what does this mean for the Toronto Maple Leafs? Well, let's dive into that right now with Kristen Shilton, who's one of our ESPN NHL writers based in Toronto, knows the team very, very well. Kristen, thank you for joining us as always. We love to have you on the show. Is this the year for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Oh, it's been every year since 67. Arda, what are you talking about? It's always the Leafs year. In all seriousness, it feels different in a way for the Leafs, I think, at this stage, just because in years past, We'll call it in the Austin Matthews era. The Leafs have had really strong regular seasons and they've been pretty consistent throughout. And maybe that lack of adversity, especially the last couple of years that they've really had to go through, hasn't set them up for as much playoff success as they would have wanted. But this year, there's some resilience to this group. There's some, in-game adjustments that are being made that maybe teams of the past for the Leafs just haven't been able to do as successfully. And it's come back to hurt them. For sure. And we've seen their star players fizzle out in the postseason. We've seen, them have to, face those roadblocks and not be able to push through them in years past as well. But this one, I think the fact that the Leafs have started to play some of their best hockey just over, I've thought, the last month or so, and especially their last 7-8 games, it really does bode well for them, I think, going into the postseason. Now, does that mean this is their year? I think it sets them up a little bit better than maybe they have been in the past. And it just feels like there's maybe a little bit more pushback as well from this group. And if there was going to be a year that you could say, maybe this is the time, this could be the moment.
You mentioned the goaltending. Obviously, the Leafs have been playing great down the stretch, but curious about your take on the goaltending for the playoffs. Who gets the majority of the starts? Samsonov, of the three goalies they've used this year, is the only one below expected as far as goals saved. Who do you think gets the crease in the playoffs?
Well, Samsonov's earning it every night right now. I mean, you look at him since March 1st, 9-1-1. I think he's got 922 save percentage, 240 goals against. That puts him, top five in the league in that span. So, I mean, you've got to think you want to go with your hot goaltender. And you look at Joe Wall in the same stretch, he's 3-5. I think he's below 900. It's been a bit more of a rough go for him. But then again, he does get the back-to-back starts, and he's usually, the guy who's coming in to support Samsonov. So it looks like they're trending in that direction, that they want to stick with Samsonov. And just given how his season has gone, as you mentioned, he is below expected, but because he just was so bad during, some of those earlier months, you just couldn't believe the drop from what he was last year going into this one. So the way that he's been able to pick it up, though, you can see his confidence is coming back. And he's playing for another contract as well. And that's a big thing, especially for, any goaltender or any player. But, he's got a family. If he wants to stay in Toronto, he knows he's going to have to work for it. And obviously the Leafs do have Joe Wall there. They like him. They want to keep him around. And they're fortunate that they do have two very capable goaltenders. But I think if you want to ride the hot hand, you've got to stick with Samsonov, assuming nothing crazy happens over these last four regular season games. I could definitely see him, if it is Florida in round one, it would be probably Bobrovsky versus Samsonov in game one.
A lot of people love to bring up the 1967 with the Leafs. A lot of Americans also like to bring up a Canadian team hasn't won the cup since 93. Kristen, you and I are both Canadians. We know how polarizing Toronto is to the rest of the country. What do you think the reaction will be if the Toronto Maple Leafs win the Stanley Cup from the rest of Canada?
I always think the Leafs are like the Yankees. They're like mint chocolate chip ice cream. People who love it, love it. People who don't like it, hate it. And that's the Leafs. So I think the Leaf fans are going to love it. And they have obviously fans across the country, across the world, who will be supporting them. But the rest of the country, I don't know. I don't know if they're going to have that support, because it's fashionable to hate the Leafs. It's fashionable to, to say, Toronto hasn't won in forever, and the Loafs, and, golf, Leafs, golf. And the jokes write themselves. They've had 50 years to practice. So I think the reaction, leading up to a cup might be, more jokes, more when are they going to blow it? Like, just assuming the worst. But there is something, Harda, like I do. Canadians, we love a good story too. We love an underdog. And the Leafs are kind of an underdog. They have been for a long time, despite the success that they've had in the regular season, despite the big name players that they have. Their lack of actual success in the playoffs has made them an underdog. And I think that's where, if they actually made the cup final, I think Canada would get behind them. I really do. And I think it would be, I remember the Toronto Raptors parade through these streets. I can't even imagine. Let's talk parade just for 1 second.
Plan it.
Kristen, I have a number in my head. I want to know what your number is. Like, how many people will be on Yonge Street for the parade, in your opinion?
Oh my gosh. Like million. It's $1 million or more. And you think of how those little cars that they had the Raptors on couldn't get through. They may as well not bother with the Leafs. They may as well into Nathan Phillips Square. Like they're gonna have to helicopter them in because there's gonna be no way that they're ever gonna get there. So, anyways, I think to sum up, it'll be lots of jokes. It'll be lots of they're gonna blow it. It's gonna be lots of there's no way they're gonna make it. But I think if the Leafs actually were to get to the Cup final, I do think that Canadians would rally and say, hey, you know what? It would be great to see a Canadian team win it, even if it is the Leafs. But I also think people in Toronto would support Montreal if the situation were reversed.
Wow. Two things on that. First of all, I've been trying to explain to my casual American hockey fan friends that the Toronto Maple Leafs are like if the Chicago Cubs were trying to win a championship, but everybody hated them. That's kind of how it was with the Leafs. The other thing, too, is I appreciate your old school reference to the loafs. Usually, you know, today everybody goes LOL Leafs, but the loafs is a classic, classic knock on the Leafs. Kristen, one more over here. Austin Matthews going for 70 goals, an extraordinarily impressive total, but we have two other players, Connor McDavid and Nikita Kucherov, who are going for 100 assists, trying to become the first players since I think like 91, 92 with the Gretzky to hit that number. All three of them are in the Hart Trophy race. So let's talk about it. What's the more impressive stat for you, hitting 70 goals or hitting 100 assists in a season?
Man, we do live in a golden era of hockey, don't we? It's amazing.
To add this question.
This is the debate we're having. You know, I always think there's two assists on a goal and there's only one goal scored, you know? So that kind of leads me a lot of the time to lean towards the goal scoring being the more impressive feat. And especially when you hit 70, potentially, when we just don't see that, not that we see 100 assists very often, especially not from two players in the same season, but there's something about the 70 goal mark that just, if Matthews hits it and the way that he's been scoring, it's not as if he's just pumping them in when it doesn't matter. You know, he's scoring timely goals. And when you watch that night in, night out, and that's, again, not to discredit anything that McDavid and Kucherov are doing, because it's so, so impressive. And they've been such catalysts for their teams all year. And neither of those teams would be in the position they are if it weren't for how good they are. So I think just overall, it's so impressive if he hits that 70 goals. I don't know how you can really, I don't know if you can put 100 assists even over top of that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And also, didn't he only score his first empty net goal like a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's not like he's padding his stats.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, it's not like they're just feeding him the puck at the end of the game to be like, you know, keep the streak alive. He's really scoring these goals when the Leafs need it. And that's been a reason why some of their best hockey has come, I think, over the last 5-6 weeks or so.
Yeah.
Last question for you, Kristen. Thanks for making time for us. Let's talk West. Any teams out there that have really caught your eye that you really circle in terms of teams that you think could make a really good run in the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Oh, it's got to be Dallas, right? Like, you look at Dallas since March, and they are so balanced. Their attack, you look at their top line, like, yeah, you've got Pavelski, Robertson, Hintz up there, but then your second line too with Marchment and Sagan, and then you've got on your third line, you've got Wyatt Johnson, Jamie Benn's on your third line. And that's how balanced they are, is that they're really not a top heavy group. They can get scoring across the board. And then you look at their back end. I think that Chris Tanev coming in has obviously been great. Thomas Harley has been really good. They have great, you know, rookie players. They've got young people, I say that like an old person. they've got that youth, right? Like there's just a balance there, I think, in Dallas. And obviously they get great goaltending as well. I think Peter DeBoer has a real, he's just got a real pulse on the team. He knows when to adjust and he knows when to stick with what's working. And I don't see a whole lot of flaws in what Dallas is doing right now. And there's that, again, that sense of just, if they can continue that, if that depth can carry them, who in the West? I mean, Colorado is great. You know, you've seen Vegas kind of fall off. Edmonton has been surging a little bit more, but really with Dallas, to me, they've been the most consistent. And it just feels like they're getting stronger. And if that continues, I don't know who is going to be the one that steps in. It'll probably be like a Nashville, you know what I mean? Like it'll be some underdog that I don't see coming, but right now I'm really liking Dallas. I really like the way that they can roll those three lines and that they have, you know, a really strong, I think, top four. And even, you know, you look at Suter being pushed down into a third pairing role. I think he's just way better there than he was higher up. And then that just makes your defense stronger when players are in a position I think to play at their best, and I think that that's what's happened for Suter as well. So, I'm on the wagon, as they say, with the Dallas.
There you go. Get Pavelski his cup, baby. That's all I care about when it comes to Dallas Stars.
1 year contract at a time for that guy, but he's going to get
exactly.
there.
Exactly. Little Joe acting like Big Joe. That's what he does. Kristen, you're the best. Thanks for joining us on the drop and spreading your knowledge along to our listeners as usual.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks again to Kristen for joining us here on the show. We do have another guest for the second time in WHL history, Western Hockey League. They are granting exceptional status. The first time that happened was for a player, you may have heard of him. His name was Connor Bedard. Mm-hmm. He was granted exceptional status to begin early playing in the WHL. And now that has happened again, and wish you had a chance to talk to this player.
Yeah, Landon DuPont is going to be 15 years old when he plays next season. His father, Mickey DuPont, had a cup of coffee with a few NHL teams, the Flames, the Penguins, and the Blues. I talked to Landon about this incredible moment for him, only becoming the third defenseman to receive exceptional player status from the Canadian Hockey League, and here's our chat. What made you want to make the leap and start playing junior so early?
I've just been playing with kids like that are much older than me and bigger than me from ever since I was playing hockey. And I just think growing up with them and playing with them has really helped me like develop as a player and as a person. And so I really think that I'm ready to obviously take that jump and enter the league early.
For sure. Have you spoken to any players like Connor Bedard that had exceptional status before making your decision?
Yeah, he actually just sent me a quick message. So that was pretty surreal getting that from him, and just seeing stuff that he's done is pretty crazy. So that was crazy.
Did he have any advice for you?
Yeah, he just told me to enjoy every moment of it and have fun. So that was pretty special.
Yeah, before you know it, you're like 18 and you know you're playing for the Blackhawks. Where did life go? It all went so quickly. Who do you model your game after as a defenseman?
Guys like Quinn Hughes, Cale Makar, and Rasmus Dahlin, like their edge work and skating abilities just unreal, and I just try to model my game after them because they're a great two-way defenseman, and I just try to strive to be like them.
Yeah, I heard your skating is like off the charts. Had you always wanted to play defense, or was there a time when you had to make that decision on whether you're going to play up front or on the blue line?
I always liked playing forward. I always wanted to play forward, but I always knew that defense was best for me and where I played best. So I obviously played some games when I was younger and some tournaments where I was forward, and it was lots of fun, but I always knew that I was born to be a D-man. So,
dude, why not both? Go Brent Burns it up in the NHL when you get there. Just do.
Yeah, maybe both. One day.
On the defenseman thing, I believe you're the third defenseman in CHL history to earn early exceptional status. Why don't you think more defensemen have this opportunity?
I don't know. I think just D-men take a little longer to obviously mature and develop, but I think that a lot of D-men now are starting to be more offensive, and that part of the game is really helping a lot of D-men translate from, you know, midget and Bantam into the WHL. So I think that D-men is defensemen are only going to get more and more offensive, and I think that it'll really help in the future with more people getting exceptional status, maybe.
Like every top prospect, you obviously have had to deal with a ton of attention really young, like scouts, coaches, everybody kind of like noticing your abilities and obviously, you know, probably interacting with you at some point. How have you kept your sanity when there's so much tension on you as a young player?
I just try to ignore it. Like during the season, I just try to focus on my season and have fun with my teammates and obviously try to win. But in the off season too, just trying to get better each and every day and just trying to zone all that stuff out and just work on having fun and being with my teammates.
Thanks again to Landon DuPont for joining us here on the show. Wish will also have some coverage on ESPN.com about his exceptional status and soon-to-be debut in the WHL. Let's get to some news and notes from around the league. The Philadelphia Flyers, John Tortorella, they lose big to the Montreal Canadiens. Everyone was expecting the press conference of all press conferences from John Tortorella afterwards. Didn't necessarily get that. Seemed the vibe was very different than what people were expecting to happen there. Maybe the vibe has changed in the locker room, or maybe the sentiment in the team. And that leads to questions, of course, when you have a season that you had and then maybe now the postseason is not in the immediate future. It's not over, but some people feel that it is. So the question people are asking, Wish, as it pertains to Torts, is he safe as coach of the Philadelphia Flyers?
I think so. There's 8 million reasons why the guy is safe. I mean, they signed him to a long-term deal. He's got 4 million coming to him at least over the next, each of the next two seasons. You're right. He did not go full volcano Torts like we all thought he would. He did not go 3-millisecond press conference like we all thought he would. He was a guy who seemed like he was resigned to the fact that every trick he tried down the stretch didn't result in this team getting over the hump into a playoff spot. And it seemed like he was managing young emotions for next season. Like I said before, Arda, like it sucks if you're the Flyers, if you're Keith Jones and you're Danny Briere, because you've watched a season in which a team was in a playoff spot fizzle. They're going to only finish a couple points out. Their draft lottery odds are screwed because of how good they played, and yet it didn't probably result in a playoff spot. I tend to believe Torts will be back, but what do you think?
I do. I agree. I think that there will be another opportunity for him next season and to see if things will improve. I mean, really, it was just one bad stretch, to your point. They were in a play. They were third in the Metro since December. Mm-hmm. So they were there in good footing for a very long time, a considerable part of the season. And so one bad stretch just goes to show you the parity of the league. We always talk about that, but also just what one good run, look at the Predators, and then what one bad run, look at the Flyers, can do to your chances and your hopes in the postseason. So I do believe he does remain as coach of the Philadelphia Flyers.
The other
Flyers.
Thing, too, is, I mean, he also coached through adversity. Like a young team, I mean, we all know the Carter Hart situation with the Flyers as well. So listen, I give Torts credit for keeping them in the hunt as long as he did. But to ultimately miss and then kind of like mess with your rebuild, I think is kind of a tough pill to swallow.
Speaking of teams that will not participate in the postseason, Greg Wyshynski, why don't you take a couple seconds to give us your official, extremely official postmortem on your New Jersey Devils?
Let's see, Arda. Everything that could go wrong did go wrong. The goaltending turned into a pumpkin. It went from 10th in the league last year to all the way down to like 31st in the league. Dougie Hamilton gets hurt. Jack Hughes gets hurt, comes back, is still clearly hurt. And obviously is having off-season shoulder surgery, should be okay by camp. They fire Lindy Ruff, they bring in Travis Green, the team somehow gets worse. It is a mess. It's a fixable mess, and I'm really intrigued to see where exactly they go for the next head coach of this team. But listen, this was a good kick in the you know what for this franchise. They got a little too high on the horse after beating the Rangers in the playoffs last year, thinking it was going to come easy. It doesn't come easy. I'm hoping that the Devils make the right moves in the offseason behind the bench and on the ice. And I hope to see something that looks something like the team that really charmed everybody a year ago with the way that they played and the way that they acted. So hopefully we see more of that. Arda, what's your take on the Devs?
I think that goaltending is the immediate. I said that last year. This time last year, we the same thing, man. Same thing. We off season when the first show we did on the drop. You can go back and listen. We were talking about goaltending with the Devils, and we're still talking about goaltending with the Devils. So that to me is a little bit.
It's the Leafs Stanley Cup parade of New Jersey hockey talk. It's just in perpetuity. The Devils goaltending
in perpetuity. They have a lot of great offensive pieces. I think the future is bright. But this was a disappointing season. The NHLPA player poll has been released. I always look forward to this because it's fun to talk about and it's fun to get a glimpse into how the players feel about questions that we always ask. What were some of the highlights and some of the more surprising results for you?
First, I will register my annual complaint about this poll, which is that I wish they'd go back to being nasty. It's like how the first few seasons of Top Chef on Bravo were more like The Real Housewives and Below Deck. But then it got really like nice in later seasons where all the chefs were kind to each other and it wasn't so salacious. Back in the day, they used to ask questions like, who's the most overrated player? I loved it. Not so much now. Results that I thought were interesting. Vegas winning the hardest arena to play in was not too shocking, although I thought Carolina getting number two in that category was a little surprising and was happy to see the fans in Raleigh get their flowers. The shocker for me, Arda, Vegas is the fifth best ice in the league in the desert? What?
Let's go.
Right.
Testament to that team. Yeah.
Must be like dry heat versus humidity because, you know, the Florida ice is always mush, but the Vegas ice apparently pretty good. Connor McDavid was all over the map on this thing. He didn't win most complete player. That was Crosby. He won best stick handler. He won a few other categories. I think he won like the player you want, the forward you want on your team if you have to win one game. But two results I thought were interesting. He was voted the second best playmaker behind Nikita Kucherov. And this made me think of something John Cooper said right here on the drop, which is that Kucherov is the guy that players in the league like to watch most. And maybe this is ample evidence of that being the case. The other one that I thought was hilarious, McDavid placed second in a category called the best player in his own zone. He placed behind Victor Hedman. Now, Victor Hedman is really good at his own zone. He is a giant monster who throws people around in the defensive zone. Connor McDavid in his own zone is not someone you'd expect to finish second. My theory on this, Arda, is that the players misunderstood the question and assumed that Connor McDavid's own zone is the offensive zone, in which case he is the best in his own zone. I just found that to be a very curious thing. And then finally, the only one that comes close to like a little bit of edginess every year is who is the player that you hate the most but would take on your team in a millisecond? And for the third straight season, our boy Brad Marchand of the Boston Bruins wins this award. And I think that's just a glorious a patch that guy should wear with pride because what a compliment. I hate playing against you, but I'd take you. You could be my wingman anytime.
Just like how the Selke will be renamed the Bergeron, this question will be renamed the Brad Marchand annual whatever. We'll rename it in honor of Brad Marchand when it's all said and done.
Speaking of trophies, someone said this the other day, and I'm going to ask you about it. The Lady Bing, which I think is a joke. I don't think the writers should vote for it. I think the referees and players should vote for it. But We always talk about the Lady Bing within the context of the guy with the most points with the least penalty minutes. Why don't we give the Lady Bing to habitual offenders of the Department of Player Safety who get through a full season without injuring anybody? Don't you think if Tom Wilson goes a full season without getting suspended, shouldn't he get the Lady Bing by virtue of that?
Like you're using gaps. Is that's what you're saying? Like not someone who's always gentlemanly or like, you know, plays the game. Not always. No. I want to see marked improvement. That's what
I'm saying. I assume Elias Pettersson is not going to take a bunch of penalty minutes. I assume Tom Wilson's going to be suspended. I assume some of these other guys are going to be suspended. If they're not, I think that's gentlemanly play in its purest form.
Got you. So you did it one season, so we're going to reward you because you did it one season.
Sure, exactly.
Congratulations.
You get parole and good behavior.
Yeah, good job. Exactly. Before we go, the playoffs are right around the corner. This is the time where people put their playoff fantasy brackets together or their fantasy teams for the postseason. Join the drop in the ESPN Playoff Hockey Challenge. We actually have a drop group. So you can face off against Wish and I all postseason long. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's at fantasy.espn.com. We'll actually put the link in the description of the YouTube channel and in the audio podcasts as well. So you can join us and play against us in fantasy all postseason long. It's going to be fun.
Take on the guy who correctly picked the Nashville Predators to make the playoffs and also Arda.
Yes, exactly. Did I? No, I did not. You're right. That's a very good point. That does it for us here on The Drop. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the pucks this weekend, and we will catch you on Tuesday.
Take care.